national now. Donna Summer, Love's Unkind. The one challenging thing about having multiple email accounts, and there's really just two ways actually, is sometimes you don't check both of them simultaneously. Have you found that, Hannah?
Yes, you think, well, I've checked this one, but you have to remember that there's another email account.
Another email account.
Yeah.
So if I checked the other email account, I would have had afternoon acts. Apologies, something has cropped up this evening. So I'm afraid I won't be able to participate on the phone-in. Extremely sorry for the short notice. Hopefully reconnect soon. Kind regards. Little confession, Hannah. I hate it when people say kind regards. I don't really mean it, you know. Just,
well, what would you rather they said?
I just think, yeah.
Best wishes?
Yeah, that's good. I
normally end it with best.
Yeah, exactly. Which is fine. That's a good neutral thing. I can go with that. Anyway, we celebrate the best of the human race. From the good news department of Manila PR, do you know who's going to actually be featured on the programme next Wednesday? That, of course, is Ash Wednesday. I know it's Valentine's Day as well, but it's Ash Wednesday. Who's going to actually be featured 6:15? Only Cly from Doctor and the Medics.
Ooh.
Spirit in the Sky. I know, very exciting. He's sorting out a whole range of sort of wonderful things from that point of view. So we just had confirmation that Clive from Doctor and the Medics will be talking about his poetry and more next week. And we've also got a range of other Lincoln-centred stuff that's coming through. We'll be speaking in a few moments to the aforementioned, if you're in the first hour at least, legend that actually is Robin Pearce, who's one of the lead writers for Starburst magazine. He's got heaps of stuff to talk about. We'll also be speaking to Larry Nemechek as well. Fingers crossed, maybe Larry will come to via the medium of Skype. We tried this with Robin earlier. Complete failure. But hopefully if he's paying attention, listening to the programme, or at least he's got somebody to actually listen for him, then he will know that we'll be coming to him slightly earlier, because that's the way that the whole thing rolls. Or indeed, that's the way the cookie crumbles, which is a phrase we very rarely hear these days. Have you noticed? It was very popular back in the day. That's the way the cookie crumbles, they'd say. And yet now,
I think you hear it said every now and again, but it's not a common saying, I would say.
No, exactly. But anyway, life continues as far as Siren Radio is concerned. As far as a flock of seagulls are concerned, well, they ran. Past tense, I ran. Present tense. Seagulls, a flock of... They do go and grab you. Do you have seagulls in Harwich?
Lots of them.
Yeah. Do they seek the sandwiches?
Oh, yes. And when we have a barbecue with this evil-looking one who came, I chased him off with a spade.
I tried to think of him as like Jonathan Livingston seagull and calming down from there. But, you know, sometimes I just feel as though they're the miniature dinosaurs that effectively feel that we've usurped their place in the whole evolutionary sphere. And actually, the only way they can get back to us is actually dive bombing food sources like sandwiches, barbecues, ice creams, and so on. Anyway, other such things will be talked about as the next hour proceeds, including Phil Herdwood and Larry Nemechek and Robin Pearce. And this is A Flock of Seagulls. I'd say, when Graham's on the show next week, the half-hour Inside Number 9 epic that he did about the awards season, probably the funniest 30 minutes of television I've seen this century. Oh, yeah, not this decade, this century. Outrageously wonderful. Graham Harper just nails it in so many ways. I don't know if you're an Inside Number 9 fan, ace correspondent and lead writer for Starburst magazine, Robin Pierce. But, you know, if you haven't already taken your televisual viewing into the world of Rhys and Steve Shearsmith and Pemberton and Shearsmith, I'd certainly say it's well worth a look.
Well, I haven't yet, but I'll take your recommendation. Well,
there we are. Anyway, Robin, of course, was over on this side of the country back in 2017 for the live Stone Tape Symposium. And Hannah, as you can see, the authentic shaking of the hands, as liked indeed by Alan Stevens, who's joining us tomorrow with the awesome Graham Harper there. Proof that there is a connection there. And as you can vouch now, in preparation for Robin's next visit to Lincoln, we've already built two new elevators. Great! Genius! You know, just especially for yourself. No
Amazing.
Expense spared. Yeah, that's wonderful, great stuff. I'm not suggesting that gravity is actually causing you to actually need two elevators. No, you can actually have a choice of three elevators if you actually use the traditional one for that. Robin's been a bit poorly, Hannah. So this is one of the reasons why I've been sending positive vibes. I could have said, you know, sad face on Facebook. I can't be dealing with that. Emojis, etc. You know, it's just step away. A 20th century boy, for goodness sakes. I'm going to send positive vibes out from that point of view. But thankfully, he's back with us now. And one of the reasons we felt it was important he joined us on the midweek drive was quite simply, normally he has a slot regularly with the Stone Tapes, which you can hear, but it's been pre-recorded. As indeed, most of them have been pre-recorded. But tomorrow is a rerun of last month's Mummy scenario. However, Robin, since we last spoke and communicated via, indeed, Facebook messages, you were saying, when you said, I'm going to be, well, what would you like me to talk about? And I said, well, there's such a wealth of new stuff. You've got the sheer delight of the new Star Trek series, which obviously we'll be hearing more about with Larry Nemechek in a few moments. We've also got the awesomeness of Batman Gotham by Gaslight.
Oh, my word, yes.
Mm. I'm intrigued. Yeah.
Well, all I need to say at this particular moment in time, Hannah, is that Krishna, of your year, I believe, Krishna Shan, who's doing her dissertation on the representation of women as superheroes. In fact, Robin is somebody who I might very kindly ask if he's happy to give an interview to Krishna, because she's already speaking to those folk at SFX. Sorry, I have to say it, Robin. The other magazines are over. I know, yes.
That's the opposition.
But, you know, I'm sure the lines fall
there. The science fiction magazines are also available.
Well, exactly. And let's face it, sci-fi now, we haven't even mentioned for years. So just step away from it. Exactly. And then we can go to Asimov's and Analog, and there is, and that's before we can get to the online material. I showed Krishna the trailer for Gotham by Gaslight, and she was very, very impressed. That's just the 2-minute trailer on Amazon, etc.
It's an impressive film. But if you read the original graphic novel, then the film adaptation is it's very, very different. Mm-hmm. Very, very different. I reread the Gotham by Gaslight graphic novel before the film came out, and I was stunned by how different it was. Yet, and this is important, it still works.
And the original novel, of course, written by the creator of Hellboy, if memory serves, Mike Mignola.
Yes, and also he did the artwork.
What's not to love?
You
have
absolutely.
Batman, Bruce Wayne, set in Victorian Gotham, in Victorian New York, with Victorian versions of the Joker, or Jack the Ripper, with Victorian Selina Kyle, with Victorian Poison Ivy, with
Yes, it's there's also a street gang of young orphaned kids, and they are led by Dick Grayson. Jason Todd is in there, and of course Tim Drake, and they of course are known as the Robins.
Clearly,
which are kind of used by Batman as Holmes used the Baker Street Irregulars, if you remember.
Mm-hmm. So, in terms of that, and you know, incidentally, I was also sharing the wonderment of guilty pleasure time, actually, Robin, here. Again, I'd recommend this to Hannah, or indeed any aficionado of matters to do with graphic narratives. Teen Titans, or T-E-E-N-T-T-I-T-N, Teen Titans, it's just an awesomely wonderful series. Fun as well. I think sometimes movies could actually learn from Teen Titans Go and so on.
They could lighten things up a little bit, couldn't they?
Just a tad. I mean, Hannah, you are clearly the number one go-to so when it comes to Harry Potter, but what about those expanded universe, DC universe and Marvel and so on? What are your views on that? Share with us.
I am a big fan of the Marvel Cinematic Universe that's been obviously going across for the last 10 years now, because I think Iron Man was released in 2008. I am a big fan of that and do follow that. I wouldn't call myself an expert if... my younger brother has a lot more knowledge on it than me. He knows all the obscure characters, reads the Marvel encyclopedia we have, and he's a, very much an aficionado of that universe. But I do enjoy watching the films and also reading some of the graphic novels he gets.
And yet, as we look at the trailer for Batman Gotham by Gaslight, that I'm sharing with yourself, because clearly if anybody is actually driving whilst listening to Midweek Drive, this is an insane thing to do. You don't want to do that. Download it later. It's all there. Somehow, and I've shared this with Robin in the past, maybe it was because of the Poison Ivy cover of Batman with Robin and Batman on opposable sizes of the cover and so on. Maybe it was because of Adam West and Batman. Somehow, despite appreciating the wonderness of DC and over the years and the X-Men and Power Comics and so on and the horror, my heart's always been with the DC universe. What say you, Robin?
Same here. The first ever American comic book I had was an old issue of Batman, which had Batman with a midget on his back with a ridiculous, like, clown nose covering Batman's eyes while the Joker punched him out.
And what's that stuff about that, really? You know, and, I mean, is that the sort of thing that Frederick Wertham would be getting upset about in Seduction of
the Innocents?
Very
probably.
Exactly.
But I've been reading Batman for, well, over 50 years, and to the best of my knowledge, despite what Frederick Wertham used to say, I never turned out to be a juvenile delinquent. Mm.
But you did work for local government, of course.
Oh, well, yes, I did some damage.
and lead writer for Star Wars magazine, so I don't know. Hannah, your thoughts on what you've been looking at in terms of the sneak preview of Batman Gotham by Gaslight?
It does look very interesting. It's definitely something I think my younger brother would enjoy watching. As I should say, he is a big fan of Batman. We have an ongoing debate where he claims to be Batman and I claim he is not Batman. It has got very elaborate.
Can I please just interject one small argument to this?
Of course, Robin.
Have you ever seen Batman and your brother in the same place at the same time?
I got him that on a mug. I got him a mug for Christmas, and I think a year or so ago, saying, I'm not saying I'm Batman, but have you ever seen me and Batman in the room together? Because this debate has been going on for years, but no, I haven't. I've come up with many an argument as to why I don't think he's Batman, and he has attempted to counter them all. It's an ongoing debate.
you see, from my own perspective, Hannah, it's been quite clear that you have been the personification of Jean Grey since the first time you actually arrived on campus. Basically, you know, you are the Phoenix Rising, etc. It's the way you actually enter the whole sort of seminar sessions in a kind of blaze of flame and things that would work through.
I know there wasn't actually a fire; it's just two false fire alarms, is what I came in and went past.
You see, Robin,
so
she says
you may actually be Dark Phoenix.
Well, Robin, you know the Midweek Drive likes to take the sort of things we discuss on the Stone Tapes and just push that boundary a wee bit more. You know, just a wee bit more from that point of view. It's sometimes Sam and David, bless them, bless their cotton socks and all 32 episodes of various other Stone Tapes are actually there, but sometimes I feel you can just take a couple of notches along the way. Yes, you know, it's a whole crucial thing. We're going to talk Matters Trek hopefully in a few moments. We're going to ideally start connecting with Larry Nemechek, and I'm going to use the medium of Skype to hopefully do that. Stay online, Robin, because we will hopefully connect with that. If things don't function as we'd originally anticipated, then we'll be back to you to ask you those last two questions in any way, shape or form, and life continues its way. Incidentally, out of the programme that you've listened to so far, what have been your favourite bits? Was it William Coles? Was it our Jersey correspondent? Was it Kira Iona? What anything that particularly floated your boat in terms of... Well,
I would actually have to say your lively banter with every guest you've had so far.
Lively banter. Well, you know, as I said earlier, the very fact that BBC Radio 2 have had to completely rebrand and we'll be doing later on in the year, I like to feel as though in some way, shape or form we've set this through.
They're running scared, obviously, aren't they?
Well, you know, we will not stop. We will not surrender. We will never give up in the
We will go down fighting.
By Grab Thor's hammer, we will go down fighting. Any particular musical choice you'd like us to dig out for you, Robin, whilst we sort of attempt to connect with Los Angeles again? Any?
Oh, do I get a choice?
Yes, you do, Robin. You know,
can you play Evil Woman by ELO?
Do you know, I think that's a very, very, very strong possibility. But I have to say, is this targeting the likes of Selena Kyle? Is it Pamela, Poison Ivy?
I was actually just thinking of all the villainesses that we were discussing earlier in Gotham by Gaslight, and it just popped in there.
Do you know, I think that's a very, very same routine. Devil Woman has come through now with the Red Devils. It's not quite the same at all, so I'll just sort of fill for it from that perspective. And, of course, there is the classic, though clichéd, introduction. If you've got Cliff Richard and Devil Woman. No Cliff, no, sorry. I know you tried with Devil. I mean, do you remember? I mean, Hannah, as you were saying, your favourite sort of number is clearly ABBA and Dancing Queen, which we will play before the end of the programme. I'm sure we'll have that played. Now, I was going to say the usual traditional introduction for ELO is it's not only a band, but it's a way of saying greetings in Leeds, ELO. It's a terrible sort of ramification of the whole system. You know, astoundingly, apart from Cliff Richard, Evil Woman is not appearing on the system. You know, the Red Devils are actually here with Devil Woman. We've got two Devil Woman. We don't want the D. You know, delete that particular consonant, take that away, and put something completely different. I mean, I'm just astounded by this. But thankfully, the righteous have prevailed. We sent that. I sense you were calling on the positive side of your Harry Potter-esque scenario there, as I was calling on the positive side of the DC Universe. Actually, channeling one's inner Zatanna, channeling one's inner dead man. It's all right, it's not hung on completely, but dead man can actually possess you. I often feel as though in many ways that in previous lives I had been a circus acrobat, but that's for another therapy session.
You're not wearing a white mask, are you?
No, but he's always doing cartwheels.
Yeah,
made a fool of me, but the broken dreams have got to
you. Oh.
course, there's always the notion of Etrigan, which, of course, is another devil side and things. Well, maybe say the fact that I was appreciative of Zatanna back in the day. Who knows? Just say the spell backwards, Hannah. That's all you need to do. Say the spell backwards, and it would have been a lot easier to work through. Robin Pierce is still with us, all being well. Hello, Robin.
I am indeed. Hello there.
Excellent. Meanwhile, our wonderful ace, deputy manager, and all-round wonderful soul, and superhero in his own way, key Star Wars fan and Doctor Who fan, of course, Ryan Jones, is currently, I believe, in conversation with Larry Nemechek, attempting to get Larry to actually call through via the Skype thing. If he has the same challenge that, of course, we've had in times past, you can't use Skype as well as actually using the telephone line.
You think it would be you could do both with them using different technology?
Two hands, two scenarios there. Ryan is now entering the room. It's wonderful. It's like commentary on technology. It's here. This is clearly, Robin, what was the case back in the day when Alexander Graham Bell was setting things up in
well,
the
that and the fact that we do have an impregnable dome around Wales that stops the internet getting through.
Yeah, and where you said it, and you know, the series only lasted for two seasons, but the two seasons that was based on the Stephen King novel of the whole system. Did you catch any of that, by the way?
Yes, on DVD. Not bad at all. It's a shame it came to such a...
abrupt end.
Abrupt end, yeah.
Exactly. Never mind. You know, that's the way forward. Hannah, Larry... let's get the names right, for goodness sake. Robin Pierce is the go-to person when it comes to matters, sci-fi and other things. His view from the castle over on a monthly basis with the Stone Tape is quite frankly legendary. What would you like to ask him?
Well, if you have such a big sci-fi interest background, what was the first sci-fi thing that you got into?
The very first sci-fi thing that I got into was way, way, way before your time. It was when I was about 5 years old, so back in 1965, I didn't watch much Doctor Who back then because we only had two channels, and BBC was actually very fuzzy and ghosty and came in and out, pretty much like Skype. I used to watch Lost in Space on ITV, one of the old Irwin Allen shows, and that was my first exposure to sci-fi, robots, futuristic spacecraft, space monsters, and all of it. So what I eventually became in life, I blame Irwin Allen.
Well, Irwin Allen's taken the blame for an awful lot of things, including the giant vegetable rebellion.
He can take the blame and, for me as well.
And of course, the junkyard in space, which was the final episode of Lost in Space.
Where the robots waved goodbye nobly.
Oh, danger, danger, Will Robinson.
Yes.
Hannah, I'm not sure whether you've seen my incarnation of Robbie the Robot, which I have in my office, and I've had there, but it's there should you ever wish to actually sort of see an example of Lost in Space that may or may not actually appear on Netflix when they actually redo the series sometime in the near future.
Debuting 2018, I believe.
Ooh, this year.
Yeah, exactly.
Another one to add to the list.
More than just altered carbon, my girl, in terms of downloading our consciousness to a whole new world. Very much so. Push comes to shove, as I say, our favourite superheroes, Robin, because,
there's no doubt about it. When I was 6 years old, my late mother bought me these bubblegum cards, and I was introduced to the colourful pop culture antics of Batman, and I've been hooked ever since.
And that brightness and that positivity somehow, despite Christopher Nolan, and what do you expect when it's Christopher Nolan and Zack Snyder? You're going to get a dark take on the whole system.
Of course. You know, but it's odd that the Adam West version is still relevant. It's the one series, I mean, I collect DVDs, I have several different series of things on DVD, but the one series I upgraded to blue so it could be even more colourful was the Adam West Batman series.
Exactly. That's Blu-ray.
And it was worth it, yeah.
Well, there we are. Well, I mean, I have the DVD, I haven't quite gone all the way to that side of things yet, but well worth thinking about, Hannah, in more ways than one, really. Meanwhile, the saga of let's try and connect with Larry Nemechek and see what he's got to do about Dr. Trek and the Gene Roddenberry archives who knows where we're going to reach with respect to that, but I think we might have to at this stage, Robin, say those last two questions to you so we resort to a telephone link with Larry,
okay,
which will be expertly delivered in her own unique and strangely wonderful Dark Phoenix way, because she's not going to have any sort of challenges with respect to the Shi'ar Emperor or indeed any of Professor Xavier's former lost loves who might have had their entire galactic solar system destroyed by the Dark Phoenix. It's enough to challenge you, isn't it, at every sort
it
of
is,
way.
It
yeah?
is.
Exactly. Well, she builds up to this because, you know, we've got Ryan back on the case in the studio pressing various other buttons as well. Genius. So I'm filling. This is the technical term. I'm filling, and I could even go to the stage of actually just gazing in wonderment at the new elevators here. But that, I think, is just pushing things to ridiculous extents, really. What I think we will actually say is ask those last two questions, s'il vous plaît, Hannah, and then somehow, in some way, shape or form, we will get a chance to speak to Larry.
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us, Robin?
I have indeed. It's always a pleasure, yes.
Well, that's good to know. Will you be joining us again anytime soon?
I would love to. Just say the word and I'll be here.
You see, this is wondrous stuff. And have you managed to catch the sheer wonderment of altered carbon as yet?
No, it's on my watch list. When I was in hospital enjoying the hospitality of the National Health Service a couple of weeks ago, I did go on to another streaming service, which I'm probably not allowed to mention.
No, you can go Netflix, you go Amazon Prime, I don't know.
It care was Amazon
days.
Prime.
Well, what the hey, you know.
And I can thoroughly recommend The Tick.
Yeah, the blue calculator. I've seen various reviews. Some people have actually said that The Tick is not quite as imaginative as the original Tick was. But then others say, actually, the new series, new incarnation, is very positive.
It's very positive. It's very, very funny. Hmm. And believe me, it's, you know, sitting in bed, watching a tablet and giggling a couple of days after a heart attack, funny.
And he's not joking, actually. I mean, that was,
no.
You know, there are those of us who sort of maintain, look, I know you've taken a step away from the civil service, but really, the reason you actually put together work for a pension is so you actually live to enjoy it, Robin, not so you actually
right. That's right, you know.
It's just too much to actually go through. Do you know, we've actually got a sound which suggests, as Ryan comes back to the studio, it's been like a whirling dervish these days, that deserves an honorary PhD, if anything, he deserves from that sort of perspective. But he's going to actually press a button, and it may mean we might be able to connect with Larry after all. So can you actually stand the excitement, Larry, of finding out whether he's actually going?
I'm sitting.
Well,
so,
yes,
so.
Exactly. I don't want to sort of overexert. You know, after you've had a coronary, and Lord knows there are many a midweek drive when I feel as though who knows what could happen, literally.
Nothing can happen in the next half hour.
That and the stone tapes, particularly when you do them back to back. You know, so it's actually quite a relief, actually, that for once Sam is doing a range of other sort of key elements with her school, and so they're not actually there. Now, I have a feeling it's going to be a case of musical treats from this point of view. Otherwise, frankly, we might be here for some considerable time. So I tell you what. Would you like to assist me in... Well, I know we'll hold back because we've got another birthday treat for Hannah.
Mm-hmm.
And indeed, as you were listening to the programme earlier, you may well know what Hannah's classic line happens to be. As we say, Larry Nemechek, are you actually there? He's being called. Sorry. That was a strange, mystical sound of somebody who may be answering and maybe online. Larry, have we managed to connect with you successfully? Whoa.
I think we have, Alex.
Oh. Well, it's okay, Robin. All's good. You can stay with us for a few minutes because although we couldn't...
Hail, the gang's all here.
Exactly. What can I say? Welcome, Larry Nemechek. I will dig out your jingle and ident in a matter of seconds. But once again, talking podcasts, another 15 minutes of magic this week, Larry, from the sheer wonderment that is the Star Trek Files, for the benefit of Robin and our listener and Hannah and folk who are unaware of the magic. In fact, I've just passed over to Hannah the original incarnation of Roddenberry's corrected version of his introduction to Star Trek Lives! ! That, of course, you discuss this very week with the third exciting episode, sponsored, of course, by Eagle Moss. Shameless plug there. I have their collector's editions of Star Trek models on my work desk, and I'm sure that Robin will as well, in certain shapes or forms. Share
I
with us.
I actually collect their Marvel movie figures.
You see? There we are.
Robin. Oh, they have their fingers into everything, yes.
We love our figurines. Talk to us about Star Trek Files and why Star Trek Lives has probably got one of the most heart-rending words of Gene Roddenberry that I can ever think of. And even in this sometimes hard-bitten, cynical world in which we live in, there are still people who turn around and say, you know, that just makes me feel so good.
Well, you're talking about... Thank you, Alex, first for those fine words. So Trek Files was Rod Roddenberry's idea to get more of his father's papers and miscellanea out into the world. They donated things to the UCLA archives in their library. And he asked me to host this show, and it's just 15 minutes. It's a podcast. But the cool thing is it's all based on pulling out a document for various reasons from his dad's files, which could be the 60s, 70s, into the 80s. And the document, as you've already discovered, is right there online that you can download as well and follow with us. And they're large memos, small letters, all over the map. But we all think that they show something about Gene, something about Star Trek, something about media in the day, and hopefully they speak to us on one of those levels, and probably all of them, today. And that one you found is I had that book, Star Trek Lives, with an exclamation point, because that's what the bumper stickers and the buttons all said in the 70s. That was the revival. That was the revival battle cry in the 70s.
And if memory serves, it had Spock, Kirk, and McCoy in a wonderful artistic incarnation on the front cover. It kind of kept me going after I'd collected all the James Blish novelizations of the series, and we were just beginning to open up a range of other factors. Just do a quick transatlantic introduction here. Larry Namicek, in Los Angeles, not too far away from Los Angeles, doing wonderful things over there. Dr. Trek, as we say, or indeed as the official Siren Radio, a radio ident, goes...
Hey, this is Larry Nemechek, Dr. Trek, and you're listening to the Midweek Drive.
Exactly. Superb. The way you actually did that in one take at the Scarborough event, Larry, is just awesome. Anyways, and in Wales, where, as he's admitted, there's a big giant dome that prevents any Skype connections coming through or anything other than just getting every fifth word, etc., awesome Star Trek lead writer, Robin Pierce.
Hi.
Hi, Robin. Yeah. I didn't know Wales was so advanced they had an anti-Skype dome. I'd like to have one of those sometime, maybe. If not for Skype, maybe for other things.
Yeah.
We consider Skype to be an evil spirit.
Okay.
Yeah, well, you see, that's probably why, if they were looking for other alternatives to reshoot The Wicker Man, Wales would be a possibility. Anyway.
Or even Deliverance.
Don't get me started. I've done my part supervising PhD students at the University of Cardiff back in the day. It's a strange and interesting world, but still. I will, with your permission, Larry, just read the sort of quote that I just thought was wonderful from Gene Roddenberry. The typical Star Trek fan is invariably a remarkable, gentle human being. Gentle as in the lovely but too often archaic concept of gentleman and gentlewoman. The kind of gentleness which could, out of a considerable affection for this universe in general and for life in particular... It was this capacity for affection, of course, which led the Star Trek fan to approve and appreciate our view that humankind is not characterized by evil, as the visionless would have us believe, or that its past has been that of a lusty infant's period of trial and error and learning. Various corrections and things from that point of view. But that, I mean, Robin, your thoughts on that?
I think it's very well and eloquently put.
The wonderful thing
I think the average Star Trek fan does tend to exhibit a little bit more tolerance towards others than most people, and you know they more fully embrace the infinite diversity concept,
which is certainly being evidenced by Star Trek Discovery. Hannah, I mean, Harry Potter fans, you could probably say the same thing. Or are you at war with everybody? You know, Gryffindor, you know, the whole thing.
No, we all work together. I mean. We have the joke saying Gryffindor's against Slytherin, but we work well together. The president of Harry Potter Society is a Slytherin, and we're often working together and we get on. So we do, I mean, at the Battle of Hogwarts, everyone comes together apart from the dark side.
So Well, you see, there we are. You've already excluded the dark side. I mean, that's like finding that you are actually a Klingon overlaid over a human being all this time, and you're having to be separate apart, for goodness sakes.
And who will sit with you at lunch?
Exactly. He's a critical thing. So I love the way, Larry, actually, in the Star Trek files, you also alluded to the fact that not only does Roddenberry, in one fell swoop there, say what wonderful people Star Trek fans are, but what wonderful people the Star Trek creators were for actually putting it together in the first place.
Well, it's the truth. We wouldn't be talking about this if it wasn't true.
Robin, Star Trek Discovery, share with us. Have you seen it? What are your thoughts on it? I mean, we're approaching, dare I say it, season finale time, 15 episodes.
I have fallen behind with Star Trek Discovery because I was engaged all last year in doing a complete run-through of Star Trek The Next Generation with my wife.
Excuse accepted.
All of Star Trek. So we're on Deep Space Nine now. Mm-hmm. And I feel, from what I've seen of Discovery, the facts are great. I'm not quite sure about the direction of the stories. I don't know yet. But it needs
Stick
to be worked
with it.
Up to.
There are moments that come around about episode 9 and 10. And if I say goatee beard, I'm not referring to Larry Nemechek, but we're certainly seeing areas.
My pointed ears just pricked up.
Exactly. And even if you actually take the line, but that's not how a starship captain would behave.
Well, every starship captain is different. I mean, Deckard didn't behave the same way that Kirk did.
Or even Picard. Obviously, Deckard was from Blade Runner. He would have been most confused.
No, I mean Decker from...
Will Decker.
Matt
Decker's son, yeah. Of course. They had problems in that family. Almost as many problems, I feel, as the Skywalker family have actually had. You know, you have the father who effectively decides to commit suicide by driving his starship through, or driving his shuttlecraft, I should say, through the maw of a giant planetary final doomsday weapon.
It was in greater service. It wasn't a pure suicide. It was more of a kamikaze run. Or
yeah, let's face it. Yeah. If Spock hadn't deemed him unfit for duty, thanks to McCoy, he would still have been there saying, take it down the throat yourselves. You know, he had his issues, you know. I mean, the way in which he actually unveils the classic line, and please bear with me on this, Hannah, because it was, I feel, one of the true artifacts of the whole thing. Don't you think I don't know that? When, you know, he's told that actually there is no third planet, Matt. It's been destroyed.
There was, but
we knew he was disheveled. We knew he was disturbed because he was disheveled and unshaved.
and everyone shaves in Star Trek. That's how bad all
exactly.
Yeah.
Did you?
So I was going to say, if you could make it through the first 2 years of Next Generation on your massive rewatch, then you'll get through Discovery. Just remember that Discovery is almost three different series.
Yes.
With a nice opening title that connects it all, and you'll be fine.
Exactly. There we are. That's the words of Dr. Trek, just for yourself.
little
special
advice taken on board.
Yeah, precisely. And we will be checking out.
And DS9 is a good wind-up for, or a good ramp-up for Discovery also.
I haven't seen DS9 since it was first broadcast, actually. So I've got the DVDs all stacked up ready, as well as Discovery and... Sadly, Enterprise, the series I never actually finished.
Oh, it was all a dream, don't worry. It was all a love letter to the fans. I won't go there. Hannah,
just
of course...
the sonic shower the whole time.
I blame Porthos. That's all I will say. Porthos was Captain Archer's little dog. Sausage dog.
Of course, yes.
I thought you were talking about the Three Musketeers.
I know you were. I know you did, Hannah. That's why I wanted to just make that quite explicit.
Zoom.
Larry, now we've succeeded in connecting via Skype. Are you happy to stay with us? Because we have Phil Hurdwood coming up in a few moments via the telephonic medium, and more magical things will happen on that basis. So are you happy there and content?
You're talking to me.
Yes,
I am, I'm always happy
that's,
and content.
That's good. So Larry's staying with us. Robin, we've already asked you those last two questions. So your task to sort of wrap us up today is quite simply to dedicate the next song, Dancing Queen by ABBA, to Hannah in a belated birthday festive celebrations. It's over to you, Robin Pierce.
And now, on Siren FM, in honour of Hannah having her birthday, we go to ABBA and Dancing Queen.
Oh,
Fact that that was a 1976 number by ABBA, a Dancing Queen, from, of course, the album Arrival, which I'm sure Phil Hurdwood, you're well aware of, aren't you, Phil?
I remember looking at the archives about that. Yeah, I'm seeing ancient documentary programs about ABBA. So yes, I'm entirely familiar with the piece of music in question.
We were time travelling, Larry Nemechek. We were going back to the 1970s without having even got need of saving whales. But it was that. So he's already getting into the whole Trek zone.
I am. Yeah. I'm getting into my Trekkie outfit as we speak.
Well, yeah, Trekker, please. Let's keep.
I should be a dancing Trekkie.
I think stranger things have actually happened, particularly when in this belated post. Well, actually. Phil, happy birthday to your good self, of course, because your birthday was back in January. Once again, I forgot, even though it's just a few days after mine, to say congratulations and well done.
And vice versa, I've made it this far.
Exactly.
And so have you. and we go back, my dear friend, we go back.
Larry, we go back to the 1980s. But Larry Nemechek, you've also had a birthday.
Do.
It's wonderful, you know, sometime this year,
I was going to say, it's a threefer. I was the 18th, so...
Yeah, you see, it's, that's why...
All the best people are Capricorn.
Well, yep.
Exactly.
Historic
Harry Sherwin. All the best Sherwin. Capricorns are Capricorns.
A particle from Aquarians like Hammer. Sorry, Hannah, we missed out that sort of final launch there, which, of course, was Phil Hurdwood online live now saying those immortal words.
Hammer Brown.
Oh, you're
historic
off. Oh,
Harry Sherwin. And hyperbolic midweek drivette.
See, that's what happens when you put your trust in the computer. It's like Kirk versus the machine on a weekly basis here, honestly. I've tried reverse logic.
But who wins? This is what we need to know.
Phil and Larry, would you like to join me in a kind of trio of things for presenting Larry's, presenting Hannah with her final birthday treat? Yes, Hannah.
Ooh,
yes.
You've
already had the official slices of upholstery from Bentley Motors.
No, slices of upholstery. Can't she have a bit of cake instead?
Exactly.
I mean, it's just not on. I mean, you can surely the budget for Siren must be better than just slices of up. Birthday upholstery, was it? I mean,
and that's dangerous when you light candles. I mean, the whole
that's
thing.
True. Gosh,
I
mean, you know, you could incinerate yourself while you're sitting down. I suppose if it's a piece of upholstery, you know. Let's move on.
We have done a risk assessment to obviously go with your
good.
Mug. Mm-hmm. I now actually have, and if you've helped me...
Very flattering to go with your mug. I mean, that's lovely thing to say. I mean, he's been so unflattering today. I'm astonished at you.
And the final treat, the trio of triumphantness, is indeed this little... plastic bag, white plastic bag, I'm passing over to you now, which you might like to describe for Larry and for Phil and our listener what your third and final belated birthday gift actually is.
Exactly.
It is?
It is a white cap
yes.
with a picture
yes.
of from the midweek drive on the very front of it.
Exactly.
Yes.
I was so tempted to actually put images of yourself, Phil, and Larry on the cap, but in the end I thought, no, let's keep it to the actual studio.
No, keep it tasteful.
That would be too memorable.
I think it should be Make Siren Great Again, maybe, on the
And you say you were looking at those Klingon scenarios in the first sort of edition. That's wonderful. Yes. Photos were.
It's a kind of weird projection thing going on.
It's strange but true. Anyway, let's, with 18 minutes to go, and clearly Phil Lynn is actually joining us at midnight at Los Angeles time, so we've got at least a few hours.
Oh, my word, he'll want to get to his bed. Yes,
exactly. Meanwhile, Larry's just starting the whole day off, really, from that point of view.
Fantastic.
In terms of Star Trek, because Larry shared with us how he got involved with Star Trek, and I think the pre-C, Larry, was you were introduced to it as a science student, and you suddenly realised that actually there was more meaning in life than actually sort of calculating various scientific things, and Star Trek had a message that was there for you.
Well, it was, but it was also, I was a history buff, I was a NASA kid, and I had many interests, and I loved models, and, you know, a lot of, now we'd say nerdy things, but it just, Star Trek just made a lot of sense in a very entertaining, cool way, and I didn't really physically say, oh, the world is in such a mess, and this gives me a hopeful, optimistic view out of here.
Yeah.
I didn't really think of it that way, it was just, it was a great adventure, but I love, now we talk about world building and the milieu, and I just loved, and again, it was pre-Star Wars, and it was a little ways back, but it still holds up so well in everything that it's inspired. I just love the fact that subtextually they were also honoring the intelligence of the audience by keeping to that. And, you know, now we have the vaunted canon crazies.
I mean, but
it made
more,
its own,
you know,
monster that way. It's all those things.
Phil.
Yeah, and I think it goes far further than just cowboys in space, doesn't it? You know what I mean? It's kind of, it really does have other layers. It does have other kind of points of view as well, which I think sometimes are really kind of a bit, they were at the time, you know, sort of ahead of their time, I think.
Oh, right. Oh, definitely, yeah. And then sometimes, you know, Discovery has finally been the Star Trek that had not just a lead, you know, gay character, but a lead gay couple, and they get criticized for being maybe behind the curve on that. But overall, and you can even look to the 60s and take for granted some of the things that Nichelle Nichols Uhura and George Takei Sulu and even having a Russian at the time and so many things. Yeah. And miniskirts. People talk about the miniskirts being sexist, but miniskirts were an act of rebellion. The women were saying, you cannot tell me how where my skirt has to be. I'm going to do what I want to do. And it was actually not sexist for the first 2 or 3 years.
Until, well, absolutely.
Men said, yes, well, I agree with you.
Really and truly, the first interracial kiss was on Star Trek, was it not? I mean, you know, I know there was a relationship or something.
Plato's stepchildren. There were two takes, Philip. On the one take, effectively, they pretended to but didn't actually make ocular contact with their various lips. I say various lips, Nichelle Nichols.
And then
I think they did, as far as I'm aware. There were various... I mean, as Dr. Trek, Larry, presumably you know the whole behind-the-scenes story with respect to did they not, what was happening?
But there's a series called Drunken History, and as a matter of fact, just aired an episode honoring Nichelle Nichols for this scene and for her Martin Luther King encounter and recruiting for NASA, and I just had it refreshed that they actually wrote it that way. Then it was for Uhura Spock. Then Shatner insisted that he thought it should be Shatner with this moment. And then they had interference from the network saying, you can't do an interracial kiss. And Shatner saying, at the last second on stage, saying, why don't we shoot it both ways? And then if we can get away with it, fine. If not, you'll have it both ways. And he did. He kept taking take after take with a kiss. And nobody on the crew really wanted to do it that way. But whoever was there, so they finally did one take where they didn't kiss and like turned to camera. And he did something to sabotage. He crossed his eyes or sabotaged the take. So they were really stuck with having to use the ones where they kissed.
Oh, good. Well, I have to say, hats off to William Shatner if that's the case.
Right.
The Church of Shatnerica is still resonant even today, and whether or not we manage to connect when he returns to the British Isles this year sometime, I don't know as yet, but it's a whole exciting time. Hannah, you've been listening to this. I know you're very keen to watch Assignment Earth, that season one episode that Larry recommended a mere year and a half ago that could introduce you to the whole world of Trek, etc. Any thoughts or questions as you proudly wear your Midweek Drive hat with your Midweek Drive mug and, indeed, a bit of upholstery from a Bentley car?
That I intend to use as a bookmark.
Exactly.
It's going to become very useful. Well.
Yeah, where do you start?
Where do you start? I'm currently wearing this very fetching hat. If you guys...
I bet it looks wonderful, yeah.
We'll put it up on Facebook, don't worry. Photos will be made available. I'll tag you both in, not in a scary, squawky way, but, you know, it'll all be there. Anyway,
you guys should get some as well. I feel like, Alex, this is the new calendars.
Really? Caps?
Yes, caps. Well, everyone's going to want them.
You've been blessed, Hannah, because I'll tell you why. I used to get sweets back in the 1980s. Since then, nothing. There used to be sweets, there used to be lemonade. Since then, and how many programs have I done?
I'm jealous because I do it every Wednesday practically, and I've never gotten anything.
Well, there you go. I mean, it's I don't know why I carry. I don't know why you carry on, Larry. I mean, it's.
Sometimes when the talent starts getting
a bad habit and it just propagates.
What you need to do is you've just got to send them some hats, Alex. Fine. You know, get some with their own faces on with you and the midweek drive, and just do a montage maybe of pictures and send these across, and I'm sure they'll be really chuffed.
We will look towards that. I mean, obviously Graham likes his calendar, so that's good.
Or just work on your bribery budget, Alex, and get you over to it.
Allocate something. Exactly. I mean, you know.
Anyway, as we move on, because once the talents start talking amongst themselves, Lord knows we could be here all day. Then we'll bring the agents in, then Lord knows.
Called a chat show.
So, Hannah, please, what interrogatives would you like to ask?
Well, I feel bad that I still haven't watched that episode you suggested to me and haven't got into Star Trek as much as I'd like. I'm trying. My only excuse is university. I'm going to have to use that excuse.
You'll be graduating in a few months' time. You can,
and then there'll be work.
Always an excellent excuse. Reason.
Life. But I was just wondering, are you into more other sci-fi? Obviously, you are Dr. Trek, but as a big...
He was Dr. McCoy as well. He did portray Leonard McCoy in a Star Trek fan film several times. So I know, Phil Hurdwood, we realised that when your own awesome world, and Rachel Hurdwood, of course, was down there, but being Dr. McCoy, being an incarnation of Dr. McCoy, it's worse than that. He's dead, Jim, as they often said about my career in radio.
It's our Jim, not as we know it.
Exactly. Right.
You were asking me I was not a hardcore sci-fi fan. That's what I said. I was a real space and I was open to it. And I read some sci-fi when I was younger, but I enjoyed Star Wars when it came out. I'm still amazed that after one or two or three movies that Star Wars became what it became when there were hours and hours and hours of Star Trek, but power to them. I think the closest thing as far as feeling like really a fan of another genre was Firefly.
That was a good series.
I love that show. I thought the show and just the saga of how it was made and the fandom reaction was the, not that I went looking for it, but it struck me that it was the closest thing to a Star Trek example. Only they got their movie within a year, but then they got no more movies.
In case you're wondering, Phil, Firefly was actually produced by Joss Whedon, probably best known initially this side of the Atlantic for Buffy the Vampire Slayer, before he went on to direct The Avengers and various other areas, and Dollhouse, and a number of things. And Firefly was a kind of post-Civil War-esque incarnation.
Western in space,
yes,
in a way.
A very good Western in space.
I'm not aware of that one. I should look out for it, because I do like a bit of sci-fi. I tell you what, I saw on the back end of one of the Sky channels something called Lost in Space.
Hey.
Anybody remember that?
We were talking about it with Robin Pierce earlier in the production. For me, Junkyard in Space, or indeed Attack of the Giant Vegetables.
I like that. Well, that's what I'm having tonight for supper, actually.
But those peas don't have little legs to run away with. You know, they could be screaming. They could be saying, oh.
You've never been down to Surrey for very long, have you? Wait till you see some of the the athletic vegetables we have down here.
Well, once again, stockbroker belt.
Where do you see their carrots with mustaches? That's amazing.
Oh, my God. That's going to haunt me now. I won't be to sleep tonight.
Well, welcome to my world, then.
brilliant.
In terms of quoting from one of the recent editions of that must-obtain magazine, Star Trek, the official magazine, the new look official magazine that comes through, I quote from the great
Dr. Trek in terms of the range of aspects that come through. You can ask him any questions, actually, Phil, and he will respond with so many positive aspects. It's just, it's quite frankly awesome the way that Dr. Trek will come through here. At last, Star Trek is back, which means there's going to be a whole new catalogue of canon queries heading for my inbox. Fans were debating the details of Star Trek Discovery before it even hit the screen, and I can't wait to answer your burning questions as it motors along. A fistful of data looks set to have its figurative hands full, but not being Bajoran prophets, we'll have to bide our time until you start writing in and turn our attention towards the first 50-plus years of Trek, because you're still asking plenty of questions about what's already out there. And in fact, the line from Michael Raper, in the Voyager Season 4 episode Year of Hell, I noticed Anorax, Kurtwood Smith, was wearing black gloves. Again, in the Season 6 episode Living Witness, many of the regular cast were also wearing black gloves. Were these props a way of illustrating evil people, or was it something else? I know you've always
probably
been...
Probably a discount at Walmart,
You've been troubled by that, Phil, because when you're putting a film script together, you're working through it, you're saying, black gloves or non-black gloves?
You know, it's a question that would probably plague me for hours on it. No, seconds, actually.
White hat or non-white hat? You know, what are we actually saying? What are we saying for that?
What are we saying? I mean, what about the Lone Ranger, you know? I mean, let's just, you know, why did he want Tonto anyway?
Please, you know, Native Americans have got their part to play as well, as we regularly say when Randy Reinholtz
joins us. Oh, I couldn't agree more. Actually, Tonto was the most interesting person, really, in the whole show, I thought.
Returning, Larry, to your wonderful line, I'll let you take over the thing here, which I thought was a fantastic response here. Let's not forget those distinctive black and chainmail gloves worn by Khan, part of his protective gear against the elements of SETI Alpha 5 in Star Trek 2. Larry... was that one of the questions which you thought maybe they need to, in the words of William Shatner, get a life, or was it a case of just run with it?
No, I was actually going to branch into how most of modern Star Trek was a celebration and homage to Thriller and Michael Jackson, but with the one glove, but I was censored, so it was licensed, so I couldn't say that.
A matter of weeks ago, we actually featured the gentleman who was responsible for putting that whole thing together, thanks to R.W. Saunders. He actually came up with that original maxim of why...
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, you see, so really? The connection is there. I'll give you the back edition of the podcast. Hannah, I believe, were you on the show where we talked about how Michael Jackson actually got that white glove and who suggested it?
I don't think I missed that.
It's time to say farewell, or Hailing Frequencies closed for this week at least. So it falls to your good self, Hannah. Well, let's do a round robin. First of all, Phil Hardwood, somebody who has been doing these shows since 1985.
Before radio was even invented.
Exactly. and one day we'll get to use Skype as well, but it's only... Would you like
I'm a Luddite. Just bear in mind, I'm a Luddite.
And you won't believe the fun that we had setting up Skype today, but, you know, we got there in the end, Larry.
should have seen the loom I destroyed this afternoon.
I was going to say, under the dome.
Yes. Would you like to ask Larry those last two questions, please, Phil Hardwood?
Larry, might I ask you, and it's been a great pleasure to meet you. Larry, although it's virtually, have you enjoyed your time on the show today?
I think even more than usual, yes.
I'm more than thrilled to hear it. And if invited, which is the most likely scenario, would you like to come back again very soon, please?
By any channel known to man, of course I would. Thank you.
Absolutely fabulous. And let's hope we can do a show together.
Oh, I look forward to that. That would be fun.
That would be great fun.
And now, Hannah, would you like to put those last two questions to Phil Hardwood whilst we are about to actually press another button, which will magically set all sorts of things up to take us up to the news at 7?
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this evening?
I have certainly done so, and I've really enjoyed it thoroughly, Hannah. You've got a superb voice, by the way. Get Alexius to get you onto the in front of a microphone and do some of the links for the show for the station. You've got a stunning voice. It's interesting. You've got a lovely tone. Get in front of a mic. Go on, Alexius. Get in front of a mic.
Well, there we are. Phil Hardwood, father of Rachel Hardwood, because he knows of what he speaks. Final question.
There is that.
Final question. Will you be joining us again anytime soon?
Well, that's down to the man who's sitting on your either left or right-hand side.
He's in front of me.
And if the man who's sitting in front of you, I would love to, yes, of course.
It'll all work well. Larry Nemechek, Phil Hardwood, we salute you. Anna Lewis, William Coles, Kira Olsbrook, and
Robin Pierce, and
yes.
Now we thank you all. Can we all wrap up with those immortal words, live long and prosper? A one, a two, a three.
Live long and prosper.
Live long and prosper. And I did the cling, I did the old thing with the fingers, you know, when
stop
he when he does
building
that
the part. It's radio, Phil. We can't see the fingers. No, you what know, other thing
that,
you're doing
not
with
not
them?
That thing,
it's
not that.
It's not
when right. You split your hands, you know, and you make the
Vulcan salute.
Spock does, yeah.
Okay. Let's do it again, shall we, after three. One, two, three.
Live long and prosper.
Prosper.
Well.